The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
George Brockler with you here in the final hour of Monday, the 5th of December show, 2022. Charlie Kirk at 10. Somebody filling in for Deb Floor at 3 because she's out on the steps of the Supreme Court, I think, doing some sort of a rally for Lori Smith. That case being argued right now before the Supreme Court. Hopefully, we get sound of that for tomorrow. And then, of course, at 4 o'clock, our buddy Stephen Tubbs back in from 4 to 7. Got callers at 303-696-1971. And also texters, Alexa's insightful text right here. I wish we could send thoughts to criminals to steal cars from the politicians, allowing crime to not have consequences. That's actually something interesting. Could we put that on the ballot? Voting to exempt criminals from liability for car theft involving elected officials. That could be super interesting. Until these idiots feel the pain or citizens vote against them, things won't change. That's true. These are the same people who tell us if you can't afford higher gas prices, just spend $50,000 on an electric car. that's so true, too. I just wonder how many of these people have ever made it outside of government at any level. I just don't know the answer. 303-696-1971. We're going to go right to the phone lines. Ann, you're on 710. Ann, what are your thoughts?
Good morning, George. It's a twofold problem, and it's very frustrating for me because everybody keeps saying, why is crime going up? Colorado has made a conscious, intentional, offensive, and calculated effort to do these early release programs. I have attended 3 presentations by the police in request of elected city politicians to explain to the public the rising crime rates and why. And it's out of their hands for 2 reasons. One is that the legislature is doing all this touchy-feely, oh, let's not have consequences, and they've early released serious criminals. They early released repeat criminals. They have no bail for repeat criminals. One guy stole a car out of the Taj Mahal parking lot after he was released on bail.
Get out of town. Is that real?
Yes.
He stole. He got released from Jeffco, the court.
One of the courts. I thought it was Jeffco, but it may not be. He was a repeat offender of car theft. He was released without bail, and he went into the parking lot and stole a car in order to drive away. Now that was in the news. But my frustration is that. And then the police can't hire enough people because since the whole George Floyd defund the police thing, nobody wants to be hired. And then once they are hired, we've had some situations where my daughter had to call the police, and they're like, we're not coming out for that. We don't want to confront that because they're almost afraid of being accused of being too aggressive. My problem, though, particularly here in the Denver Metro and in Jeffco recently, is we had an election. People bitch and moan all day on Nextdoor and social media about crime in all neighborhoods and what it's costing us. But then they went and voted for a non-enforcement sheriff. They went and voted for a non-enforcement legislature that has put all these, you know, early release, no bail options into place. So we have a world that's escalating in crime because we have no consequence.
What's your big fix? Yeah. Like, if you were going to fix one thing, is it to have bail for every property crime? Is it to, I mean, what would you do?
No, I don't understand why people bitch and moan about, I don't know if it's ignorance, stupidity, a disconnect of logic. But the electorate went and voted for the very thing they've been complaining about. Their number one complaint and fear, rightly so, is crime of all types. Women being sexually assaulted in King Cooper's parking lot at Jewel and Evans. women being stalked inside grocery stores. At least grocery stores used to be a safe place in most neighborhoods. They went and voted for the same kind, or reelected the same kind of politicians that put these decisions into place that caused these problems. And I don't know how you fix that.
What do you do with the juveniles? Do you treat them the same or differently than adults? And if you treat them differently, and we do right now, what change do you make to that system?
That's a real dilemma. That's a whole separate topic to me, not to be folded into the adult topic, because it is complex. You have juveniles committing adult felonies without consequence.
All the time.
And they're like, I get out in 24 months when I turn 18, you know? And you have juveniles in gangs, like I said, doing adult criminal offenses. And then you have juveniles that do the usual little, you know, little things that are pretty harmless, but need to be stopped. I was having problems with my daughter being disrespectful and doing things she shouldn't at 9 or 10. Nothing criminal, but, you know, you see how the slippery slope goes with kids that are growing up. I took her on a tour of Jeffco Jail.
Oh, my. They allowed you to do that.
Oh, my God. They not only allowed, they were so appreciative.
Wow.
Because they know that neglectful parent leads to these things getting out of hand. There's no structure at home. There's no consequences at home. She wasn't punished. I just let her know this is where you're going to end up if you continue on this path. And it was scary. It was scary for me because we walked in there. So we went and spoke to the sheriff. He talked to us privately, and he just said, okay, you want to? He didn't say this is what's going to happen to you or anything. We just took her on a tour. That's all we needed to do. The sheriff escorted us. We walked it. You know what it looks like in there.
Yeah,
I do. Multi-level,
yep.
Open courtyard thingy. We walked in there. Oh, my God. We got screams and cat calls. And
the cat calls.
On, little me.
The
we
cat call things
me.
Is real. That is real. That happens.
Yes. And we walked through, and she saw the size of the cell, which is the size of her whole bed. You know, it is no bigger than the size of her bed now or then. And we walked out of there, and it was a scared straight kind of thing. And like I said, the sheriffs were very appreciative, and they understood. And they said, you're doing the right thing. Let her know where it leads. Because they said, too many of these kids, they get here, and they really, they don't appreciate the consequences. And then... years later, now she's an adult, years later, we have kids like, oh, there's no consequences. I don't have to worry about that. I'm going to get out.
The other problem that we run into is we delay the imposition of any incarceration for so long, it makes it seem like it's never going to happen. But the flip side of that is the most impactful night you will ever spend in incarceration is the first one. And then every night thereafter, and it's just the mind's ability to deal with things, you start to develop a survival instinct that allows you to conclude, I can make it through this, I can make it through this. So if you lock someone up for too long, too early, you create a sort of immunity from the feeling. It doesn't mean it's costless, I'm not saying that, but it does have, it loses its impact. Do you know what I mean? Like that first time that you go in, that has the greatest impact. And there's got to be a way we can balance that with the desire to want to not send someone to jail who can be fixed without being sent to jail. I just don't know what the answer is. I am of a mind right now where I am concluding that for my community, let's say Douglas County, every single person that steals, I don't care if it's porch piracy, shoplifting, or whatever, you must go to jail for at least a weekend. And it just feels like that alone, even though I imagine Darren Weekly, the sheriff-elect in Douglas, would be like, what? But I think that alone would send a hell of a message, because that doesn't happen anywhere in Colorado.
Correct. It's the same desensitization, though, that you mentioned, that happens in the brain with violence, electronic games, with what our kids watch on TV, you know, no consequences, shoot them up, people die, but they come back on the next series. You know, there's studies and research on the neurology that desensitizing children to violence makes it easier to commit. And do some, if you'd like, there's a wonderful book called Evolution's End by Joseph Chilton Pierce. And it talks about how we desensitize the frontal lobe of the brain in our society where we need bigger and bigger and bigger hits to feel. And it's my theory, besides the gangs coming across from Mexico, it's my theory why in the 90s we saw an increase in the hard drugs again, a resurgence of the heroines and the heavy drugs, which had been going down, because we raised a generation or two to be desensitized to feeling. And you don't just go out and see a blue sky and feel wonderful. You really need it hitting you. And technology has done that. But literally the style of technology on television, the staccato edit of visual streaming screens is so disjointed, so ADHD, so frenetic. The brain can't keep up with it. So what the brain does is it shuts down the receipt of those images and just takes in what it can. But that desensitizes feeling, and then the person, it has to get louder and faster for the person to feel anything. Well, and I think that's a part of it.
And are you going down the road, though, of suggesting we need to go all Tipper Gore and start putting warning labels on video games and music and stuff that have those violent lyrics and all that?
We didn't do that. We didn't connect the neurology until after the fact. And but now we have two generations raised on it. And if you open up a millennial or a Gen Z's computer screen, it's cacophony in a visual way. You see 50 million, they've got 50 million windows open, and they go back and forth, back and forth, back and forth. If you look at television today, it almost hurts your eyes because it's cut in a way that's zing, 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 zing. Go look at the previews at a movie. It's too late for that because the generations that were raised on it will never understand.
So then what's the answer?
Well, it's a complex, multi-approach problem. And again, I go back to consequences and a disconnected cognitive dissonant electorate that votes for people that do the exact opposite of what they're complaining about. And I don't know how you answer that other than moving to another country where these things are different. Yeah, you know, I really don't know.
And thank you for this too. And I got to let you go because I want to get to some other callers. But and I want to look at that book. If you text that in, I'll try to look that up. There's another one out there that touches upon some of what Ann talked about, and it's by a guy named Grossman, Lieutenant Colonel type. And he wrote a book called On Killing, and it was in many ways a similar discussion of what we do to young men and now young men and women to put them in a position to be functioning soldiers on the battlefield, to sort of desensitize them to what they're doing. That's an interesting part of this. It can't be the whole answer. And one of the texters texted in here and said, hey, I was with Ann all the way until she started talking about banning video games. And I think what Ann is saying is if that would have been a cure, we should have done it a long time ago. It's impossible to do it now. We got to look at something else. It doesn't seem to me like there's an answer to that. And I'm of a mind too, that if we broke you or we put you in a position to break yourself and you can't be fixed, that's not an excuse to leave you on the street. If you can't be safe out there amongst us, then we need to put you in a place where your inability to be safe doesn't cause us any problems. That is called a jail or a prison. 303-696-1971. Can I tell you about someone who's out there trying to make better lives for a ton of people, especially when it comes to where they want to live? Now, listen, you may be motivated to want to move for a whole bunch of reasons. One, your job situation has changed, maybe for the better. I hope it's for the better. Maybe it's not. Maybe it's because you want to move to a safer part of the metro area. I get that a lot, by the way. There are a ton of people who move out of Denver into the surrounding suburbs, and they get a little bit further away. Sorry to the folks out in Elbert County who see Elizabeth becoming Parker East. I know it. But all of this stuff is an effort to try to change your life for the better. And then you think, oh, my God, can I buy a house in this market? Do I even qualify? Is there can I still get a great deal on my current house and yet get a good deal on the dream house? The one person to go to is Gay Ribble with Empower Home Team Keller Williams Realty. She doesn't just have all the buyers. And I've told you before about the 14,000 plus buyers she has in her program that are ready to just take a look at your house and make the purchase, or at least make you an offer that you can consider. But she's also got decades of experience in the metro area. She can tell you where the new homes are going in. She can tell you if this is the right time, or maybe it's time to just sit back a little bit. Or I can imagine a situation based on a conversation we had on air where it could be, yes, you should sell your house right now, but let's put you in a place, maybe even to not make a purchase until the market adjusts a little bit further, thus maximizing your dollars. You could even sell your house and rent it back from the people that buy it as a way to try to hedge against that. There are so many things that are in place, including things like their 100% of asking price guarantee program. And when I say guarantee, it isn't just lip service. They'll sign it. They'll promise to sell your house at the right price at the right time, or they'll buy it for you from cash, all that other stuff. Nobody else does it because they're simply the best. They'll take the most stressful situation you can be in and make it stress-free. Give them a call, 833-301-SOLD, 833-301-SOLD. Or you check them out at gayhasthebuyers.com. Gay is G-A-Y-E, hasthebuyers.com. Some of the texts that have been coming in here, one, there's that one, she was making sense till she got into the banning the video games. Someone else had suggested pick one state senator who has been in office over 6 months supporting the decriminalization of the legislature, start a recall, make it about crime, then roll out additional recalls. I love the idea, and conceptually and even legally, it's possible. But the problem is the logistics. Now, you're either going to pay for someone to go out there and assist in getting signatures, because a recall requires the signatures. And that takes money, a lot of money. We saw that with the Priola thing, only to find some left-leaning Democrat contributing judge out of Denver shut down the whole process over nothingness. So we're stuck with a Democrat, Kevin Priola, in a Republican district that never voted for him for the next 2 years. Are you kidding? Or at least through this session? What a joke. So the recall thing is a little precarious. If you think you can do it organically, hey, my hat's off to you. I know we did that back with John Morris down at in Fountain back when, 2012, when they passed the magazine capacity and background check laws. That was successful. Those are rare. And unless you're going to be able to organically generate an army of people to go out and get signatures, it's going to take money. And I just don't know that people have any more money to invest in these things right now. I feel like, even if you were to initiate a recall and try to get it on the ballot for a special election, it wouldn't escape at least this legislative session. The Dems will have 120 days to continue to wreck the state of Colorado. Now, what's crazy is they all think they're doing great things for Colorado. And it doesn't bother them at all that they would limit your speech or your limit your right to practice your religion or limit your access to firearms if they thought it would make the state, in their view, better for whatever niche group they think they're representing. It's just a problem. One of the things I think we need to look at is structurally in the legislature. Why do we have a House and a Senate? 65 House members, 35 Senate members, they're each elected from every 10 years redrawn districts based on population, but they don't have, neither one has any special superpowers. Like the U.S. Senate at least has the ability to confirm nominees and weigh in on those kinds of, we don't have any superpowers. The House of Representatives at the congressional level has the ability to initiate bills based on revenue. Our legislature is just like duplicates of each other. Like, what the hell is the purpose of a state senator that sits on top of three other House members? Like, what's the point of that? I don't know how it makes us better. It just slows down the process. That's one thing. But if we're going to have a second House, if we're going to have a Senate, is there a way to structure it so it's not just entire, that somehow it touches upon, and maybe this needs a change in our state constitution, but what about the idea of running along county lines or some other sub-government entity, the way the U.S. Senate used to be? Because right now, we are dominated in the Senate by Boulder, Denver. We are dominated in the House by Boulder and Denver. One corridor dominates just about every level of government. Oh, did you need further proof? Where's the governor from? How about the AG? How about the Secretary of State? It's all Denver, Boulder. The heads of the House and the Senate, I'm interested to see what the new legislature looks like in terms of leadership. But on the Democrat side of things, it is all Boulder and Denver. Let's go right back to the phone lines. Brian, you're on 710 KNUS. Brian, what do you think?
Hey, this seems like it's kind of intentional. Do you remember It used to be a felony. If a felon was caught with a weapon, a gun, then he would get a felony automatically. But they changed the law to make it to where if you're a felon and you get caught with a gun, now it's a misdemeanor. Have you heard that?
Yes. And remember, it's not automatically. It's just that was the class of charge for possession of a weapon by a previous offender. But, Brian, and you're right to point that out, it's actually worse than that. Because if you'll remember, with the help of the attorney general, the legislature and some left-leaning DAs and the governor have all gotten together to rearm tens of thousands of convicted felons in the state of Colorado by saying that that POWPO charge doesn't apply to them anymore. So now it's not even a misdemeanor. It's a nothing-meaner.
Oh, yeah. See, they're trying to take the good guys' guns away. They spend their whole time doing that while they're trying to give the bad guys guns. It makes absolutely no sense.
So. Isn't that crazy that we'll have the leftist-leaning, most liberal red flag law in America, the one with the least due process protections for law-abiding members of society? Because if they had broken the law, we'd take their guns and prohibit them from getting new ones by putting them in the criminal justice system. Red flag doesn't require that. So we're going to do that for law-abiding members of society, and then we're going to turn around and say those people that have proven incapable of functioning within the confines of the law by getting a felony conviction, which is hard to do. It is hard to become a convicted felon in the state of Colorado. And we're going to say, it's okay. So if you're a car thief, if you're a drug dealer and you got convicted, you should still have the right to have guns, probably because you need to protect yourself from the cops or other drug dealers.
Yeah. So to me, that's almost by design, right? Why are there, what logical explanation can we come up with in our head why they would do that? Besides if this is, you know, by design.
Well, but what do you think the end goal of the design is? It's clearly by design. It's not accidental that they've done this. They've had two shots to fix the felon with a gun law, and they failed both times. What do you think the design is for?
You know, I have no idea. Maybe to create a problem, then they can come back and take guns to fix. I don't know what their end goal is, but it's got to be something devious.
I think at the end of the day, the lefties under the Gold Dome and the people at the state level offices, they despise law enforcement. They don't understand it. They don't understand the criminal justice system. They've long ago signed off on this notion that it is oppressive based on race, which is statistically perhaps arguable, but factually completely in error. And they want to say, well, listen, we want to take the stigma away. This shouldn't be a felony. You shouldn't have to go to jail for this. You shouldn't have to go to prison for this. They blame the system for the people that bring themselves by voluntary conduct into it.
Yeah, until people, you know, like I said, we're all going to have to suffer until people wake up and vote differently. And unfortunately, yeah, it's not bad enough, evidently, yet.
Brian, I think that's such a smart thing to say, man. I think you're right. I thought we were at rock bottom. And Brian, forgive me, I got to cut away for a break. I thought we were at rock bottom. It is clear we aren't. Because I don't think people would continue to vote for a system that fails them over and over again if they were feeling that failure. And whatever it is that took place a few weeks ago on Tuesday, I don't know, man. But I just don't think Colorado has hit rock bottom yet. But we're going to sure get a chance to taste what that's like after this next legislative session when there are not nearly enough Republicans there to make any meaningful difference at all. I have no idea what they can do to stop what's coming, but it's coming for us. Listen, I want to cut away for a break. We'll come back. We'll get to the callers on the line. We'll get to some of these other texts. Before I do that, though, I do want to tell you about Littleton Jewelry. It is the Christmas holiday season. Whether you celebrate Christmas, the winter solstice, Festivus, Hanukkah, fill in the blankica, it doesn't matter. There's going to be a moment where you want to do something special for somebody special, and that's to give them a gift. Now, could you find it on Amazon? Sure, I bought a bunch of stuff for people I like on Amazon. Could you go to a regular jewelry store like Park Meadows or Cherry? Yeah, you could. But anybody can get what they sell. Anybody. What anybody can't get are the unique custom-designed jewelry at Littleton Jewelry. So get in your car. Drive over there. Heck, maybe you're on your way down to the Aspen Grove Center there where they have some pretty cool stores also. But drive down, get south of Hudson Gardens, turn right at the jewelry repair sign, park in there, go in, say hi to Jesse and his team. Tell them you're a 710 listener. They're going to love to hear that. And then say, what can you do for me when it comes to custom jewelry? And boom, right away you've put yourself in a position to put a smile on a face that lasts not just for the day, the week, the month, but a lifetime. And not just that lifetime, because it's heirloom quality legacy, pass it down to the next generation stuff. That's what they do at Littleton Jewelry. They take your good wishes, your well wishes, and they turn it into something you can see and touch and will make somebody smile over and over and over again. Get in that car drive out there. You can also check them out at littletonfinejewelry.com. That's littletonfinejewelry.com. When we come back, you, me, the phone lines, the text, George Brocklin on the George Show, 710 KNUS. George Brockler back with you here for the back half of that last hour here on 710 KNUS on the George Show. Some of the texts that have come in here. One is, we have a rural versus urban divide. That is true. It has been true for a long time. It's getting worse. I had a supporter of mine when I ran for attorney general. Smart young guy, big entrepreneur dude, made a ton of money young. No one's definition of a Republican. He's got libertarian tendencies. But one of the things he said to me that I found interesting and a bit shocking was when he said to me at one point, I don't know why we continue to subsidize people to go live in the rural places because they should all just be moving into the cities. They just make it so much harder to provide services and all these. And I thought, how elitist is that? I mean, nothing could be more elite than suggesting that city living is the only way to do it. But that's sort of where we're at, too. And when it comes to a city-rural divide, it concerns me when the state of Colorado shows up and creates a one-size-fits-all approach to crime that handicaps and handcuffs all the rurals out there who might treat crime differently. I mean, if you are Tom Nestor, super sheriff out in Lincoln County, you get hit with the same garbage laws that Denver and Boulder visits upon themselves. I don't care what they do to themselves. If they can allow a Lincoln County, an Elbert County out there, a Sheriff Norton, or a Douglas County, or even Arapahoe County to make decisions for itself about crime. And because they don't, this is why you see this shift with Aurora, to try to create a series of crimes that nibble away at what the state authority would otherwise be, but to provide much more immediate and meaningful relief for their constituents. One other thing I think we ought to do, and I think what we ought to do, is to have, and if I'm ever in a position to do this again, because let's say hypothetically I become a district attorney in the metro area again, I will create, and I know this exists because I asked it to be created when I was there, a heat map. And it's a heat map that is going to track where the criminals come from to commit these crimes. And I think there ought to be some extra surcharge. I don't know how we impose it upon Denver and folks, even Aurora. But Aurora, and when crime is committed by people who are coming into, let's say, Douglas County or Elbert County from Denver or Aurora, there ought to be some, that's an unvoted on tax on Elbert County. Like, Elbert County paid for law enforcement to protect the people inside of its borders who are in there, whether they're visiting or otherwise, from criminals who should be coming from inside Elbert County. That's how you change public safety at that county level. That's why in the old days you would drive people to the county border to get that criminal element out of there. Well, we don't do that anymore. But there ought to be some kind of a surcharge on the city of Denver for the criminals that come out of Denver and either hop on the RTD and ride down to Park Meadows, or take a stolen car, drive down and do garage burglaries, and they do in Castle Pines or Highlands Ranch or whatever. There ought to be a surcharge on the city of Denver if those people are currently being supervised by Denver jail, Denver probation, Denver DA, doesn't matter. There ought to be a surcharge on that supervising thing. And if you had a system where that city was being hit with, over the course of a year, millions of dollars in the, and I don't know, I don't even know the legal vehicle to do it, but my God, we got to do it. And by the way, the reverse can be true too. Denver should be able to tax Douglas County criminals, Douglas County, for the criminals that go from Douglas County to commit crimes in Denver. My guess is it's not that many. My guess is one of Denver's great exports is its violent and property crime citizens and residents that are there. That's my sense of what it is. But wouldn't it be magical if there could be an end of the year, end of the quarter reckoning where the number of people you have produced that you have refused to supervise and to prevent from committing crime, that now takes money out of your budget up there in the city of Denver? Me thinks there'd be motivation to want to do a better job, right? Like, it will be cheaper to house them in jail than it would be to let them come down to Douglas County and commit a crime, or Arapahoe County. There's something there. There's got to be some way to do that, especially with all the mobility of criminals these days. Something else. Another idea. And this is, again, a market-driven solution. This is more private sector stuff. If you are a parole or probation officer, your salary gets impacted by whether or not the people you're supervising commit new crimes. Now, I want you, both good and bad, right? So if you're able to take someone, let's say it's a parole officer, and we know the parole system is completely broken, and whoever Polis has put on there not doing a great job, or if they have a great functioner out there, they're being outnumbered by the kooks. But let's say you're a parole officer, and you have someone that you're going to, if they can go an entire year without committing a new offense, and I don't mean you violating them, you should be violating them for even the technical violations, right? Because what we've seen are technical violators do commit other crimes. If you can go 12 months without them committing a new crime, little bonus in your pocket, little taxpayer provided bonus in your pocket at the end of the year. If you can go 2 years, a little more of a bonus. 3 years, and now we've got a habit. We've got 3 years of someone arguably not committing new crimes, an even bigger bonus. However, if the people you're supervising go on to commit another crime, you lose a little something from your paycheck. Yeah, that's right. Yeah, you just don't get as much. And it's not just parole officers. I mean, maybe the entire Department of Corrections system. There's got to be some metric in there. You go on to commit two, and the class crime matters too. You get someone that goes out there and shoplifts, yeah, you lose some bucks from your paycheck. You have someone that you supervise that goes out there and commits a violent felony, oh boy, now you're losing hundreds of dollars. And for the number of people that you supervise, if you suck at what you do and that system can't fit, their budget keeps getting punched. Those individual paychecks keep getting punched. How effective could that possibly be? Here's someone now. I had a very positive experience with teens this past weekend. I went to the Bear Creek Craft Fair. There was teens, and I think you mean were. There were teens all over the place volunteering. The school decided to drop the price from $5 to $3. Huge crowd, although it says Hugh crowd, like Hugh Jackman. They had the kids running, the concessions, and the spin, the wheel. I won a piece of fruit from the stand. The best part was they were Key Club and band members. The Key Club has about 50 members. All I overheard, a senior that was going to CSU had a $2,000 a month scholarship because of her involvement in something after school. A big shout out to the math teacher that sponsors Key Club. That's great stuff. That's fantastic. I love to hear stories like that. I wish that those were the stories that got more attention and, frankly, got more traction in the communities, but they don't. 303-696-1971 is our number. I'm going to go right to the phone lines here and get Frank. You're on 710. Frank, what are your thoughts?
George, you got a lot of good ideas. I think the risk-benefit thing of how much they help versus how much they cost is the bottom-line decider. I was going to ask you, did you hear or do you ever listen to Red Pilled America?
No, I haven't yet.
Yeah, they've got a podcast, and especially the one last night. And they had a podcast an hour long about how the Democrats have controlled and ruled and made these big cities blue. And it goes way back to a bunch of unions and union dominance years ago that take over the vote. And basically it's given out freebies and the promise of freebies taken from the tax pool and putting into that. But it would be well worth your while to listen to last night's Red Pilled America podcast. I think just
Red Pilled, got it.
Red Pilled America. It's put on by a couple of young millennials, and it's very up to date and very, very accurate. The second thing is, having said that, if we've got these liberal politicians in these big cities, our society is becoming like a bunch of salmon trying to swim upstream. We're getting defeated because it's catch and release. You know, it's not doing any good. So we both know that there needs to be discipline at home, which there's not, and then there needs to be punishment or incarceration for things like that. I think we have to think on a grander scale. I've thought of the Nebraska plan out in the corner of Colorado, Nebraska, Kansas, and Wyoming, a big penal farm where the mild offenders, the guys that hold up the 7-Eleven and just shoot or stab, they're in the outer circle. And then the further you go in are the more heinous criminals. But as they reoffend, they go there not to come back in society. That would decrease the amount of police needed and clean up slowly the society. And it's just something that's going to drop the cost of incarceration from, say, 75 a year plus to 15. They become farmers, plumbers, gardeners, blah, blah, blah. But they just, if they can't quit messing up in society, they have to go to some place where they have to mess up with their own. So I don't know.
I think those ideas work. And I want to see a sample from other places across the country, like you've just done for us, Frank, with things that'll work. This legislature has absolutely no guts when it comes to increasing any sort of punishment or perceived punishment. And that's why they've created systems where people's convictions automatically get sealed just after them living a law-abiding life for a couple of years here or there. They create these things to try to de-emphasize the impact of someone's criminal conduct on themselves. Whether they've been reformed or not is not relevant. What's important is that they just don't get the consequences.
You said the key before, that these people, these Democrats and these liberals, really think they're doing the right thing.
They do. They absolutely do.
They seem to keep coming up with the wrong answers. And so you give them a clipboard, you give them a position or power, the power to make legislation, and that should be looked at, too, and examined whether they have the power to make legislation or not, and scrutinized, and hopefully things like Twitter and more honest social media speech will hold these people to account.
Of course, you've hit upon the Twitter thing. That's another topic for another day with the Elon Musk stuff going on. But Frank, as always, thanks for getting there for us. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Hey, Nick, everybody else on hold, I promise I'll get to you after a quick break. Just a huge reminder about tomorrow, Step Denver. We are live and local, 6 to 10 a.m. out there at one of the great programs for saving lives that you can imagine. And it's so fantastic, too, because they just don't take any taxpayer dollars. God, I love that, because the government wants its hands in everyone's pockets. And if they give that money to someone else, they want to tell them how to spend it. It's insidious. But if you're looking for success, 39 years worth of success, you can help them out by giving whatever you can, $5, $10, $100. Get big and bold in 2022 and go to coloradogives.org/stepdenver, coloradogives.org/stepdenver. And you are on your way to saving a life. When we come back, Nick, the other callers that are lighting up the phone lines right now, and even some of the texts, 303-696-1971, George Brockman on The George Show, 710 KNUS. George Brockner back with you here for the final few moments and segment of the show. We're going to get to, I think we can get to Nick, and we'll get Nick on in just a second. I just want to warn everyone that, oh my God, Mark, this just came live. Here's what we're doing. We are going to go YouTube live video starting, I think, Monday with the show, which is a huge mistake. I'm looking at myself right now on the monitor they've fixed up, and it occurs to me now I'm going to have to get up even earlier and start caring about personal hygiene. Because
I want to know how this helps us get advertised.
I don't know. I look like I just rolled out of the back of someone's car that I've trespassed somewhere in Denver, because, damn, I'm going to have to shower. My hair, is it that gray? Son of a gun. Well, listen, look forward to that. We'll be pushing that out on Monday. You'll be able to, I don't know if it's going to be like just live, and then if you miss it, too bad, so sad, or if it's going to be archived where you can go back and watch me, because I'm going to lose sight of this thing. I'm going to go finger to the nose like I'm doing right now, like I'm picking a winner. It's going to be a problem. You're going to see me go down south for some adjustments that have to take place over the course of the show, because I'm seatbelted in here and I can't get out. Unbelievable. 303-696-1971, the number. Nick, take us on home, my man. What do you think?
I think, I don't want to flatter your ego, but that I'll idea of back charging those counties that release these violent offenders and then may do a crime in another county is brilliant, because the quickest way to get anybody's attention, and you know this, is hit their pocketbook.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I agree.
Hit their pocketbook. And you can, and as far as the people on the left side of the fence thinking they're doing the right thing and blaming, they have an inability to assume no responsibility for anything. They never assume responsibility for their actions. It doesn't exist. Excuse
me. That's because, Nick, it's your and my fault. It's not their fault.
It's always somebody else's fault.
Yeah. How about this?
They never can look at the mirror and say, I'm the problem.
I want to continue to problem solve with you on this. How do we do it? Like, I could find home of record. Like, when we hook up someone and they go to jail, we usually get their home of record or whatever's on their driver's license if they have one, or their ID or whatever. Is that the basis for it? Is that when we say, ha-ha, whatever you have on your driver's license, that's who gets tagged?
I just think you need to go, the people that commit the really expensive crimes, you can find those records, can't you? I mean, anybody can
yes.
find anything on the internet
yeah.
now.
Yeah, if we can't find your home address, if you don't have a home address, you even today, we can't cut you loose for bail or probation or any of that stuff.
That's
We've got to
right.
know where you live.
So to find that information and then back charge counties like Boulder and Denver for violent criminals they release and then committed crimes somewhere else, that would get their attention. That's the, because otherwise, it's just going to get worse and worse. And I'm afraid the other, either you said it or the other caller, things are going to get a lot worse before they get better. We have not hit rock bottom yet.
I've thought about, from this standpoint, and I worry you're right, Nick, I've thought about this from the standpoint of, could you, I don't even know if this is constitutional. Something tells me it's not, but I just haven't looked into it, okay? So could you punish someone harder who comes into your county from somewhere else to commit a crime, right? Like, could you say, hey, you're going to go to jail for a day if you shoplift and you're from Douglas County and you steal from Douglas County residents. But if you come in from some other place, it's 2 days. Like, there's something about that my gut reaction is maybe there's a constitutional problem there, but I want to tax the people that come in here to commit crime. And Nick, I think you and I agree on this based on what you've said. I feel like Denver ought to be able to have whatever permissive crime environment it wants, right? As long as the crime stops there. But when you create an environment where when you catch cold, we all get sick, now we want to punish you. Don't you think? Don't we want to make you, we want to create a disincentive for you to do that. Don't you think?
Absolutely. I think it's a brilliant idea.
Well,
it needs
you,
to be explored. I'm sure there's some, you know, details that have to be ironed out and all that, but the only way, fastest way to get somebody's attention, and I know I sound like a broken record,
not at all,
is to hit them in the pocketbook.
Amen to that. Nick, thank you so much, man. Great call. I think we can squeeze in one more, but not before I read this text, Billy. Will there be a Billy Cam? That's a great question. Mark Crowley, if you're out there listening, Billy Cam.
No way.
Because making Billy engage in any sort of hygiene before the 6 o'clock hour is ridiculous. Deanna, you're on 710. What do you think?
Hi. Yes. I had the great fortune of living in a lot of different states and different countries, and I did this in the late 20s, early 30s, and it really turned my attitude around.
Really?
There used to be a program called People to People International.
Uh-huh.
They also have programs that are domestic. I just think it would help our culture and our society a lot if people could get out of the box of where they're living and see what things are like elsewhere.
So
it would put things in perspective for them, and I think it would
self-cure. Would that address our criminal justice issue, and if so,
yes.
How?
Yes.
How would it do that?
It would help people to see the other side of what's going on. And
what does that mean?
To get a different perspective. To see that they don't have it so bad.
So you think if they saw that they didn't have it so bad, they wouldn't engage in crime?
Yes.
Interesting. Interesting.
And I also think it would improve chances of people volunteering and being more kind and compassionate to one another.
Well, I'm a big fan, Deanna, of the idea of exposing kids to other cultures. And I've done my part with that, taking the kids mm-hmm. wherever I have to travel internationally. I agree with that. I just don't know if that would be enough to convince someone not to engage in criminal conduct. And you hear that music, Deanna, it means I got to go. I love the outside the box thinking, Deanna. I think that's how we get to a better answer for our community. Hey, listen, that's it for us. I want to thank Dan Oates, outgoing interim chief of police for Aurora, for his whole hour he spent here. You got to listen to that at 7 o'clock thing. Tomorrow, it'll be you, me, everybody else at Step Denver. Stick around. 710 KNUS.
Mm-hmm. three-star general Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.